I think we're losing you, Renzi.
Hey, Casper. Uh-oh. We've got a malfunction.
Bloody hell.
Seriously? We're getting something.
Testing 1, 2, 3. You see anything?
I see it. Oh, Dundee, though. It's like silk. Right. Hello and welcome back to Street PX, a street photography podcast. I am Casper. With me, as usual, is my partner in arms.
Jim Watkins. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Another day in paradise, man. How's things going for you?
Not too bad. I mean, you're just getting back from New York City, having a great time out there, right?
Yes. Oh, very, very awesome trip. That was actually my first time in New York, believe it or not.
Man,
I've been to pretty much all big cities from Seattle to Miami, New Orleans, even an unfortunate go through on Houston and Dallas before. But this is the first time I've been up in the New England area, and New York City's always been somewhere I wanted to be, kind of a bucket list place. And so, yeah, I was there for 7 straight days, and I walked and walked and walked every single one of those days, too.
And from the pictures I've seen so far you put up, man, they've been pretty amazing, man. You were pretty productive out there.
Yeah, I recently put together kind of a post just kind of rambling on about it. But, I mean, the finer points are I actually put down about 70 miles in 6 days of walking, because obviously there's like that flight day where you just don't want to do anything except land on a bed and find a pillow.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think the worst part is once I got back, or actually when I was there on the second day, I went to offload my SD card and had my 2 hard drives I brought with me both crashed, because
wow.
that's life.
Yeah.
So I had nothing to offload any of my images to and still had 5 days left to go. So I had to make a nice run into B&H, buy a new hard drive. I had to buy a new SD card, and I'm just glad I ended up being where I was when all the shit hit the fan.
Yeah. That B&H is amazing, isn't it?
Oh, dude, it's surreal. I'm not, people have heard me on here and my blogs and so forth talk about B&H. I have a bit of a love-hate relationship, but I'm not here to bash on a place, because I spent like $200 in there.
He took your money, man.
really.
So what's coming up, man? What's going on?
Yeah, it'd be a good place to drop in a couple of plugs. I'll go ahead and start out with the first one I want to bring up is anybody out there that's going to be in San Francisco area. There's actually a exhibit going on right now at the Harvey Milk Center for members, staff, volunteers of the center. Pretty much all sorts of different photography, from fine art, street, landscape, you know, something for everybody, right there in that really great space in Du Bois Park. And secondly, and the one that I'm more excited about, because I'm going to be a part of it, coming in December, on December 8th, is Exposed. This is an exhibit specifically for San Francisco street photography. It's being organized by admins, myself included, as well as Jim here, of the San Francisco Street Photography Group on Facebook, which is an amazing and immense group for the area. And there's so much talent within everybody that had submit. And this is a juried exhibition, too. This isn't I'm probably actually not going to be chosen, knowing my luck. Jim, I'm sure I've seen some of yours. I'm sure you'll be in there, but it is a blind juried exhibit.
I don't know about that. there's some great ones out there, man. I saw the entries, and wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's looking great. And that's going to open there on December 8th, running through January. So if you're in the San Francisco area, you know, step on by.
That's right. Also, I want to put in a plug for Willem and Sandra Yonkers. They are doing their We Street book. Now, we had them on the show earlier, and I mean, they're amazing street photographers based out of Rotterdam, and they're putting their second book together, We Street 2016. And entries, they're calling for entries through October 31st, so the end of the month. So it's a tough one to get in. They're only choosing 150 images from the entire world, you know, from whoever's submitting. So, but it's worth at least trying to get in there. I put in a few already, and you know, like you said, I probably won't get in there, but it's fun trying, you know. But anyway, you know, you got until October 31st, so get you know, it's We Street 2016. You'll find it on Facebook, so check it out.
Cool. Excellent. And actually, now that as I'm listening to this, I'm having a bit of a flashback because the Yonkers were actually some of our early guests. And when we talked to them, it was at the back end of the We Street submissions and jury, and all of that had come to a completion, which tangents me over into this. This is our 1 year. Well, we're at our 1 year point with Street PX. Can you believe it?
Man, I'm actually a year older.
For a year. Yeah, a year older, about 1,500 new gray hairs popping in and out. Well, not for you, Jim. You usually keep it nice and buffed on top.
Yeah, but my beard shows it.
Oh, yeah, you got that salt and pepper. That's all right. It looks distinguished, man. You know, that's what I call mine.
That's what they say to old farts, man, I tell you.
But yeah, it's hard to believe we've been doing this for a year and we've been growing every single month. And I think, you know, we're at a point now where we can be called legitimate, right?
That's right, that
wonderful L word.
Yeah, exactly.
And with legitimacy brings awesome guests like the one that we have here today.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to segue into. Why don't you introduce the guy?
Well, I know we've been wanting him on the show for quite a while now, and finally that day has come. We have none other than LA's finest, Renzi Ruiz.
Welcome, man.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Going great.
Great.
Right on.
You know, I'm not worthy, man.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure to be on here, man, and big honor, man.
We're glad to have you.
I'm just glad to see another photographer in here sporting the old fedora.
Yeah, well, I'm getting the salt and pepper. I mean, I keep it pretty pretty clean as well. And, oh, my God, like every day a new white hair somewhere.
I don't know what's going on. The stress of street photography.
Yeah.
It's so good to have you on the show, man. And we're gonna jump in, find out what makes Renzi Ruiz the artist tick.
Oh, no.
So let's give you a good, nice, open softball question. Let us know, who is Renzi? Where'd you come from? You know, what brought you to the camera?
Well, originally from Manila, Philippines. When I was a child, my family moved out here to good old Glendale, California, right near Los Angeles. I was always a bit of an artist in a way. Grew up drawing and staying up all night drawing. I was into comic books and just creative stuff. Like, I would go out. I remember going out and finding just trash. Just little pieces of junk that I would find, and I would put things together and make little toys as a kid.
Oh.
Nice, so resourcefulness.
You know, yeah, and, you know, just running around the neighborhood. But, yeah, growing up as a teenager, too, just drawing, got into painting a little bit in my art classes, some music stuff, like, you know, singing, but I didn't really focus on singing too much. And then, well, since we're up talking about photography, I always sort of took pictures, and I kind of had to remember this because I was looking through a lot of old albums in the last 2 years. And I'm like, you know what? On that trip, it was just the family. So it was either me or we had somebody else take it. So I figured, well, I guess I was kind of into photography and just, you know, putting the camera up and clicking. But it wasn't until around 2008, 2009, after doing a bunch of vacations, like I went to Guatemala in 2008, and I went to New York, like, you know, where you just came from, in 2009. And at the time, you know, I only owned a point and shoot. And so that's all I was learning from. And that's all I knew was just to point it and shoot it, just like back in the day.
You gotta start somewhere.
Yeah. And then I was like, well, I was looking through photos online and I was like, how are people getting these amazing shots of, like, you know, back then it was just sunsets and, and landscape shots and the portraits with the blurry background. How did they get that? So I started kind of looking into it, and luckily I kind of got into it in the age of the internet, because there's so much information out mm-hmm. there, you know, and I just started looking up, you know, YouTube instructions and all these. At the time, there wasn't that many that I could find as far as street photography was concerned. Just a few articles about it, but I didn't find actually street photography until 2009, maybe 2010. It's sort of when I Googled it and was like, oh, that's cool. It kind of combines the thing that I liked on my vacations, which is just walking around, exploring, and taking pictures. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can do that. I don't have to travel back to New York or some distant country. I can just do this right here in my own backyard, kind of. And but around that time, I was looking online for stuff and decided, well, this point and shoot's not doing it anymore. Like, I figured out that, you know, I'd set it on manual and be like, okay, well, what's 2.8 and why can't I get that blurry thing from here? And
wait, you had actual manual mode on your point and shoot?
I did.
That's actually a pretty damn good point and shoot. Yeah.
It was like one of the cheapest ones that I could find at the time. I was like, well, I don't want to spend $300-$400 on a camera. I just need to go on this vacation. So it was this old Kodak Z12. I forget the number, but it was like really high megapixels at the time. So I was like, ooh, wow, high megapixels, HD video.
That means good pictures, right?
Right. And then like, I would notice like at night, I'm like, well, why isn't it doing this? And why isn't it doing that? And I can't get these pictures that I'm seeing online. And the more websites I went to and the more blogs that I read, I realized, oh, I need a better camera. At least that's what I thought at the time. And so I looked around, and that's how I found blogs like Ken Rockwell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Ken Rockwell.
Yeah. Right? Steve Huff. And the sort of the camera, the gear focused websites. And so I started learning about the different focal lengths and different sensors. Yeah. And
kind of get the technical stuff down.
All of that boring, really boring stuff. Yeah. So I went out and got myself my first sort of DSLR kit, which is like the D90 with the 18-55 kit.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, well, I still can't get that. So I was like, okay, I need a fast lens. And I got into getting, I just basically just bought a full frame Nikon, really, really fast lenses.
Oh shit, and you just jumped right into it.
I did. I was like, I really want that. And you know, because at the time I found this Tutorialist. He's out of, I think, in the East Coast, New York, I think, right? He travels around. And I was like, well, what focal length is he using? And how's he getting that, those kind of pictures? And I was like, ooh, the 80, he's like, he uses the 50 and an 85. And I didn't have the 85 at the time. So I was like, oh, I got to get the 85. And I literally had that lens on that camera for a long time. And shot at 1.4 for the longest time, realized how out of focus like most of my shots were. And I was just like, "Wow, that bokeh!" but you know, you learn. Like that's how I learned, was a lot of trial and error with a lot of the gear that I got. But it was good that I was able to get them and play with it and experiment and figure it out along the way while reading tutorials and things like that online and you know, tips and tricks from a lot of people at the time.
Mm, great.
On the plus side, at least you're doing some investments on camera gear that you can sell later.
Exactly.
I think that's something that we all run into is when we first get in, at least I'm a tech head, so it's just like the first thing that I always gravitate toward is gear.
Yeah.
But it takes a little while to learn that it's the gear is going to make, you know, bad images look decent. But if you ever actually want really good imagery, you got to learn the technical side of things first.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly.
And, you know, I'm pretty bad. I mean, not bad, but I'm not, it doesn't come naturally, I guess, to me, right? Like whole technical aspect of everything. Mm-hmm. So the way that I learn it is by doing it and then going, oh, okay, well, now that makes a little bit more sense. What I just read and it was like Greek to me and now I can understand it. But that's how it started. I was just going out and practicing on family and friends and just bringing a camera along wherever I went. And then when I found street, I was like, oh, I don't have to bother my friends and family anymore. I can just bother strangers now.
Yeah, like, there we go. You know?
Yeah.
But now, Renzi, you do street photography, but you do more than street photography, right?
I do. I've always done more than street photography. At least I you know, ultimately I just wanted to be a good photographer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not even for a while, I never even considered myself a photographer. I was just, you know, a designer, a graphic designer, an artist. So once I started to learn more about photography and figure out, okay, well, this is how the camera works. These are the lenses. I just wanted to be able to take good pictures and not be like a good photographer. I just wanted to take good pictures for myself. You know, it kind of started off. So people, even with a point shoot, people were like, "Oh, you take really good pictures. Like, you have good compositions." And I was like, "Well, okay. Well, what's that all about?" And it made me think about it. I was like, "Well, maybe it's because it works the same as design. It works the same as when I'm drawing and painting and things like that, where like composition is key in those different mediums as well." And so, for at least that aspect of it. I felt like, well, I don't have to focus much on that. I guess that's already part of how I think. So it's just focusing on how the camera actually works and the different angles that I can get and when do I have to turn on the flash. And again, the bokeh thing at the time, now I don't even think about it unless I'm like shooting a portrait or something like that. But to go back to that, like, these days I'm doing like weddings, portraits, headshots, sometimes urban landscape type stuff, for different clients. And so it brought a lot of the things that I was practicing at the time and just kind of, learning because of what I saw other people taking pictures of and trying to accomplish that. And sort of just putting it all together and going out and going, okay, I got to try this technique and I got to try that new technique that I learned on YouTube videos. And it was fun. I really enjoyed the process, right, of just going out and being creative again. Because for a long time, I felt like I wasn't, you know, I was working for a corporation. I mean, I was still in my field of graphic design, except I was a little further up from doing the actual design. I was already managing it. So it was less work, less creativity, dealing with, you know, Excel sheets and schedules and things like that. So I was like, you know, I need to find something creative to do again. You know, that's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of my life. And I felt like I didn't have that anymore at the time. And then I was like, so should I get back into drawing? I was like, man, I'm going to be sitting in my room by myself drawing. And the point is to like get out.
Be a reclusive artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's not what I was like, should I do design again? And I'm like on my computer alone again. So I was like, I needed some. And then I thought back to those vacations. I was like, oh yeah. Walking around, taking pictures. I had that creative flow going, you know, and I was able to get in the zone once in a while. And that's really what got me back to picking up the camera. And I think that's what led me to find street photography and to find other people that enjoyed it. Because when I first started, the only people I knew were somebody at work that did dog photography, and her website was called Doggy Style. I don't think she has the website anymore, but that's what it
was. That's good marketing.
Yeah.
So, you will never forget that.
Yeah. No, you won't.
But it is, the community is a huge aspect of it. I mean, that's massive.
Yeah. And just finding people who, are interested in sort of the same thing you are, like wandering around and taking pictures of people you don't know, which is like just to people who don't get it, they, you know, it's like, wow, why are you taking pictures of these people?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. It's just something about it. I want to tell a story, or I want to capture an emotion or a mood or you know, something like that, you know, when I see it, I feel something. At the time, that's what I was going through. Was trying to find something in my photos that, and maybe it was more subconscious, because now I'm talking about it like I knew what I was thinking. But it was more subconscious, like looking for things that expressed how I sort of felt at the time. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think subconsciously, a lot of us probably do that when we're taking pictures, and then when we're editing through our photos, like the ones that really like, oh, because sometimes I'll even look at a photo now and not feel anything about it. And then maybe a year from now, when I'm in a different mental state and emotional state, I'm like, oh, that really speaks to me now.
Yeah.
So at the time, that's what I was doing. I was just going around trying to take pictures. And there was this mood and these feelings that I had that I really wanted to express.
Yeah.
From things that were going on in my life at the time.
Interesting.
Sorry.
Well, you know what? I was going to say, because this might be an interesting segue. I was going to talk about this later, but you had a blog post that you put up a few years ago, and it was called The Art of Observation.
Yeah.
And I want to read a quote that you had from Elliot Erwitt, who was a Magnum photographer. And it said, "To me, photography is an art of observation. It's about finding something interesting in an ordinary place. I found it has little to do with the things that you see and everything to do with the way you see them." And then you use that as a lead to discuss development of a personal style.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of talk about that? What you were talking about in that blog, developing a personal style.
Well, you know, at the time, I probably didn't know what the heck I was talking about.
It didn't sound like it, man. You faked it really good.
Hey, it's all about sounding smart.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, when I started that, And I haven't written since that time, and I was just getting started, and I wanted to sort of write about my experiences starting as a photographer, as starting in street photography as well. But I think what we just went through as far as the technical stuff, right? Like
You
go through that period of time where you're learning your camera, you're trying to figure out what does what. And then once you get past that, I mean, technically you can make a good photo, right? Anybody could go around and accidentally or on purpose take a decent photo that's well exposed and compositions are pretty good. But then, you know, you sort of look at everything and you get to a point where you can be more creative with it, right? Mm-hmm. Once you know this is what 2.8 does versus f8, right?
Right.
And that's when you begin to, when you start to choose and when you start to decide what the settings are and how you want your photo to look, is when you start getting into the creative part of it. And a lot of that comes with how you see the world and how you observe things. Everybody's got a unique way of seeing things. And that, for me, that breaks down into what your preferences are, like what movies you've watched, what books you've read, you know, the type of personality that you have. Because there's certain things I just won't take pictures of because it grosses me out. I don't want to look at it. Better yet, I don't want to take a picture of it either because it grosses me out as much. But some people are attracted to that, and that's what they take pictures of. So for me, it was about the creative process and observing life. And what is it about the everyday thing that is interesting to me? And for a long time, I was looking, well, not for a long time, but for that time, yeah. I was looking for what is that for me, right? Because I was able to take a good picture. And if you put it up on a website or a screen with a whole bunch of different pictures, it would just blend in, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, just fades into the background.
Yeah. I was looking for something that made it my own. I think it came from my design sort of world or my design mentality where I'm trying to create a style out of something. Because for a long time, that's what I did. I would design things that would either fit a certain genre, like because I worked in the DVD and the movie type of industry, and I was designing and working on the user interface for the DVD or the Blu-ray.
Right.
So I'd watch the movie, figure out the genre and the style and the world that was in. I would design the buttons and the screen to fit that world.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming to my photography, I was like, okay, well, I need to find something that's who I am. And so part of the observation is observing myself and what type of photography I wanted to make. You know, it wasn't until I got influenced by, Ray K. Metzger and Elliot Erwitt and, you know, some other photographers out there that I was like, oh, wow, that really speaks to me and touches me in my soul, that I was like, okay, that's similar to what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But of course it's not going to be exact, but I can take parts and pieces of different ones and make it work for myself. And that's really how I work too, is just always just take little bits of everything that works for me and sort of figure out how to make it my own. And so that was the struggle, or that was my goal at the time, was to shoot and then figure out, okay, how am I going to do this? And a lot of it was mixed in with the technical stuff too. So, okay, I'd look at pictures and this was a good way for me to learn, was I'd look at a picture and I go, I wonder what focal length that was.
Oh, and trying to remind yourself?
No, just to study the photo. And
oh, you mean others.
See. How they did it. And why were they standing straight up? Were they on the ground? Why did they choose portrait mode versus landscape? What time of the day was it? And so that's how I was learning other people's photography. I wasn't even really looking at the EXIF, because a lot of the photos I was looking at was, it was from film.
Yeah.
But even when I would go on like Flickr and look at EXIF, I was like, well, that, that's not going to help me, because it's a different place, a different time.
Yeah.
I want to learn it for myself. I mean, certain aspects of it did help,
Right.
But it's not exactly. So I like the guessing game better. Like, how, what focal length do I think they used?
Mm-hmm.
And why did they choose this position? Where were they in relation to where the light was coming from? Things like that. That really helped me when I was walking around downtown LA to position myself and find that the photos that I was starting to create that I actually liked. And then I know I'm going off here, but then I found
it's
out.
It's okay. Ramble along. That's what we usually do.
And then I found out about, how important light is, right, to photography.
There it is.
And that sort of revolutionized everything for me, and sort of made me get into the style that I still do sort of till today, was that sort of high contrast for the most part,
mm-hmm.
Black and white. And, I learned that from one of my mentors, Frank Jackson, and I took his workshop a while ago. And I, being such a novice, I was like, well, how do you see in black and white? Because I was trying to figure out, can I put a filter on my glasses? Like, what can I do to just see in black and white so I know? And of course, I could put it on my LCD. I can change that to black and white. But really, like, when you're looking around, how do I see that?
Yeah.
And he was just like, just focus on the light. And like a little light bulb or, something like that came out of my mind. And for the next year, that's kind of what I focused on after that, was just figuring out how to shoot in different lighting situations. So a lot of things that I learned from photography is just shooting out in the street. And I would take that and go, you know, when I'm shooting a portrait and go, oh, focus on the light. Okay. This is, oh, I'm getting better pictures now. Like, that's so awesome. And the more successes that I had, the more I kept practicing and you know, the more happy I got with the work that I was doing.
That you have something that a lot of us strive for, and that's kind of a personal style, at least one that you're confident in and kind of defines you. And when you go out, is this something that you consciously seek? Do you look for interesting corners or like scaffoldings or what have you to get those cuts, those rays of light that way?
Yeah. Basically, when I go out, the first thing I do is I figure out, like, today is kind of gloomy today, which is weird. When I walk out, I'm like, okay, well, where's the sun right now? And then I'll walk around and find little corners of light, a street that has maybe one side of the street that's pretty lit from the sun, and focus on those areas. Like, I'm not even... After that sort of realization of just focusing on the light, I didn't even look in the shade anymore. So like everything that I was doing, I was just focusing on these nice sort of finding a setting, right? Like a stage, so to speak, and that's well lit. And then I would just wait around a little bit and you know, find a character, somebody who's dressed a certain way or has you know, is doing something interesting, and just focus on that area and work. Because from just that one area, I can get 20 to 100 different types of pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. From just moving from one angle to another, going from a back, doing something that's a little backlit to, you know, to front light, and to make it, you know, more in line with the type of stuff that I'm doing.
Oh man, I tell you, Rinty, you and I have to go out shooting, man, because I do exactly the same thing. You know, yeah. I love doing it. As a matter of fact, Casper and I were talking before you got on, and we're kind of going through that phase where we're looking for high contrast, you know, mm-hmm. light shots. I like to do the transformation from light to shadow, you know, a body passing from the shadow into the light, or, you know, something like that. So, you know, that's what I've been doing a lot. You know, you can find that a lot in San Francisco. I'd love to come down to shoot with you in LA, you know,
trying to find that.
And Casper said he was doing a lot of that in New York. You know, when he was doing that shot.
When it wasn't raining.
Yeah, never. I go to New York and first time, I'm sure not very few New Yorkers wish this, but when I landed, I was like, please let there be like 1 or 2 days of rain. I want to experience sky water again. It's just, even though it gets rid of my wonderful light, I just want to feel rain on my damn face at least once in this freaking decade.
Yeah, right.
And I know recently we had an earthquake and me and you were getting to talking about that. And, you just rubbed it in that it was raining down there. So all we got was an earthquake and you got rain. But kind of to that point though, about chasing those lights and, you know, where the style, like Jim was saying, we're kind of getting back into that harsh contrasting. That's something that I did do in New York, is look for these shafts of light coming between buildings. And there was nothing more exciting than seeing like where they had some scaffolding built or something. And just some rays of sun was just cutting through. You know, mm-hmm. 2, 3 mm-hmm. at a pop, and seeing that harsh black coming right into the sun and cutting off somebody's face just like at a corner or a wide angle. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some debate on, you know, how much background and how much street scene should be in an image, you know, between being a portrait or being a street shot. But you can catch so much emotion just by using black as an element, just mm-hmm. deep black.
Oh, yeah.
But well, yeah, anyway, rambling on that.
Well, you know what it is for me? It something I realized was what the shadows do for me is to clean up my composition, right? And what I mean by that is there's going to be a lot of things in the background that could be a distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what the shadow does is hide a lot of that and allows the viewer of the photo to just focus on the things that are lit, right? And it's sort of the way bokeh works, I guess, in a way, where you want somebody to focus on what's focused and just let everything fall into the background. And I figured that that was one way that I was cleaning up my compositions. So back to that, I like going to New York. And what I found there, well, because it's the East Coast, I had to start in a different, sort of in a different way, right? Like, because then you want to start east while the sun is behind you and go west. And then by midday, I was going back the other way.
I actually learned that the hard way because New York, at least for me, I was in Manhattan for most of the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Was that where you were at as well?
Yeah.
The island has a harsh skew to it. So mm-hmm. like the light works perfectly. Say if you go up and down Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
I mean, you could stay on Fifth Avenue from Wall Street all the way up to Central Park and beyond mm-hmm. into Harlem. But I made the mistake the first day of starting at Fifth Avenue going down in the morning.
Yeah.
So I was going into the sun. The whole, until I wisened up and I was like, hell with this. I'm going to jump on the subway, go all the way down and then return.
Yeah.
Cause you're right. You do kind of, you walk with it till midday, then turn around and go back the other direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something I wouldn't have known if I didn't start like sort of focusing on that and learning about where the sun's going to be. And, you know, they always say the golden hours and as beautiful as it is. And I really love to shoot during that time. That's only 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night. So I had to figure out for the rest of the day, well, what am I going to do and how am I going to, get certain shots that I like? And, you know, out here, it was just finding those, spots, right? And in New York was the same mm-hmm. sort of way, but I kind of have this where the sun is in mind, throughout the day. And in New York, what I really loved was the Wall Street area. Buildings were really it's an older part, I guess, of New York, right? So the buildings are closer together. There's more chances of these just really narrow shafts of light coming through in certain areas, and of course the character of the buildings and the people walking around there. It's amazing. It's amazing. I love going out there, and I did the same as you. I walked around all day.
You feel like you don't want to waste a single minute, of that time. That's why I didn't even end up in Coney Island until the end, because Coney Island is, you don't think about it, but that's an hour plus on a mm-hmm. transit just to get down there. Mm-hmm. And every time I think to myself, I need to do Coney. I'm like, no, but that's like 2 hours of my day gone.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even take the subway a lot of times too, because I'd be underground and I'm like, well, what if I miss something or if I see something while I'm walking from one, borough to other borough. So that was fun. And
you're right about the buildings though, in Wall Street area, like that, you always say to others, be mindful of your backgrounds. That whole area, just everything that is going to catch that backdrop is going to be gorgeous. Be it that brass or the brick or what have you.
And it's different. It's a different look compared to Times Square, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you go into Harlem.
Times Square was a circus.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. I was there recently and I got some shot. I loved it. I love those crowds and I love hanging around.
I mean, there's even times where I feel like when I'm in a place like that, like Times Square, where I just feel like there's too many people, to get what I imagine for some of my photos, right? Like some of the things that I do where I isolate certain people. And the energy is just different, right? From there it's the same out here. There's like going to downtown is different. There's certain areas that have different characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I found up there too in New York. And actually New York, that trip in 2009 is what inspired me to come back here. And cause that time I was just using a point and shoot, came back out here and was like, I need to capture that feeling that I had when I was walking around.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, yeah, I started walking around in that sort of jewelry district area of downtown LA that I was like, oh, wow, yeah, it sort of has it. But I mean, of course, it's not the same. But it provided me a hint of that feeling that I had when I was walking around in that area. And it wasn't until 2012 is when I went back to New York with a lot more experience, a lot more knowledge of photography, with new gear, of course. I brought like everything that I had.
Fill the bag. Just yeah, fill it up with everything.
At the time, I had like the D90 with a bunch of lenses, the X Pro. I think I had gotten the X Pro 1 already at the time, and I had the X100. And so by the third day, I just brought the X100 out every day because it was just too much to try to bring the D90 and a bunch. I'm walking around all day and it was just like, no. And plus in subways and in those close quarters, the X100 was perfect. It didn't make a sound.
That leaf shutter, yeah.
Yeah, you could just get up real close and nobody's really, you know, paying attention or can hear the clicking of the camera.
It really does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so those were, you know, really memorable trips to New York. So I've been really wanting to go back. But this time I'm not going because those two times that I went also coincide with family weddings, cousins of mine. So it was the first year was in the June and the second time was in July. And so I'm walking around at the most
hottest time of the year.
Yeah. So this time, if I'm, you know, planning to go back, I'm trying to go like towards the end of the year when it's cooler, or the beginning of the year when it's cooler. Not again in the heat of the summer. Plus, it rained like most of the time that I was out there, so I'd get like towards the end, like a few days of really good light, and then I have to come back home. So, but that seems to be the case with a lot of places. That's weird, man.
You started to think back on some travels where it was all the same.
Yeah, like Tokyo, like it was overcast pretty much all the whole time until like the last few days.
What days of the week were you in Tokyo?
Yeah.
Or of the year, I'm sorry.
It was in December.
In December?
Yeah, okay. This was one of Eric's, I think he might have been one of his first workshops there. And
the Eric, Eric Kim?
Eric Kim.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was Charlie Kirk and Bellamy Hunt and Alfie Goodrich were the co-instructors of that workshop.
Oh, right
there.
On.
And that was a really fun trip going out there. But yeah, it was like overcast the whole time. And, you know, I don't use a flash, you know, and you know, the thing is out there, I tried it with Charlie, of course, mm-hmm. Charlie Kirk, And I just knew at the time, I was like, it just doesn't feel right to me. Like, I'll use it if I need to, if it's too dark. But that won't define, like, how I take my photos or it won't be part of, like, you know, how I usually take photos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. We had Danny Oshi in here recently who's like Charlie. He's a flash shooter and, you know, Boris the Flash or the guys from Full Frontal. It's like, There is a specific style you pull from that, and when you match your flash imagery up with your, you know, normal everyday shooting, your common stuff, there's a major difference. Yeah. So yeah, you have to be aware of that whenever you're shooting and trying to create a project or something.
Well, I think that's what, you know, if we're sort of breaking it down to going back to the style thing, you know, a style comes upon once you start doing something more consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Your images have a consistent look to it and a consistent perspective to it, which is what's great about using something like the X100 or anything where you just leave one lens on there for all of you.
Yes.
Like, for example, for like all your street work, you just use that one camera or that one lens. And, you know, the one sort of way that you see the world. And it looks good, right? Because you can see the world, but if it doesn't, translate into a good picture, then it's different. So there's a lot of people who do, and I've seen it out there. A lot of people do different types of styles, and it works for them, right? It works.
It's
for
all
them
about the way that, finding something that you're comfortable with.
But the what makes it work for them is that it becomes consistent, and so, you know, the editing part is,
which is a good segue. Let's go into that. Yeah. Because editing is one area that I have a lot of difficulty with. And to be frank, that's more than half of what photography is all about, is trying to choose which images to get rid of and which to keep.
Absolutely. And for the beginning, I remember my Flickr feed just had a lot of...
A dumping ground?
Oh, my God.
Just all my bad photos on there. And I'm glad I went in and got rid of a lot of them. But that's a big part of it. It was just all mixed.
Do you have a process that that you conduct to try and like isolate those good images from the bad? Or is it just more going with the gut?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. I try to wait as long as I can.
Yeah.
You know, certain things, certain situations won't allow you to wait that long. Like, for example, a year, right?
Yeah.
Which I've done before, where I've waited a whole year but before I looked at photos again. And really see it for what it is.
Yeah.
Right. From separating, you know, it's been talked before. You separate yourself from the day that you took the photo and the emotions that you felt that day, and you see it just for like for composition, for, you know, how it hits you at that point.
Yeah.
And so I try to wait as long as I can. There's certain situations where, of course, you can't do that, but I think that's the way to do it. I mean, it doesn't have to be a year, of course.
No. I mean that's the difference between making wine and scotch, you know? Going for some really aged stuff with a year.
Yeah.
The only way I can get into the year is if I go back and I start looking through my archives. That's something I do a lot, is I'll pull up archives from 2-3 years ago and just say, because you always end up finding one or two in each folder. I mean, depending on how much you shot at that particular time, that you see differently now, and you're like, why the hell didn't I choose this one? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it just at the time didn't match with where you were as an artist.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been through that as well, where, you know, I posted something and I shot maybe 4 different shots of that specific subject or the specific scene. And I'd chosen one, thought that was the shot of the day, and that's the great one. And then I go back, you know, a few months later, and I'm like, oh, wow, actually this one works so much better in so many different ways. Why didn't I? And that's why I'm not like rushing to post things.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting a little bit, making sure that my eyes adjust to that scene, and to making sure that it actually works, whatever it is, like the littlest thing will matter. You know, the subject being slightly more to the right versus where it was, where I thought it would be good, but like the third shot actually was better, or like the emotion. The train's coming, guys. So that's maybe what you're hearing.
Started hearing the toot toot there.
Yeah,
that's all right. But yeah, I mean, that's an aspect of the street photography that you have to work and get out into the street and shoot to get used to knowing the difference between, you know, a little like somebody's head, if it's tilted one way or tilted more another way, it's going to give a different emotion, a different feeling. But more to your point about finding an image of, say, a series of 4 that you clicked off, and one you might have posted that day or that week, and then you come back to it a few months later. This is one benefit of the digital disposable age, is everybody has like a Twitter memory.
Yeah.
So you can always delete that other one, repost this new one, and then nobody's going to be the wiser. Right. And if they are, you can be like, no, just deny it.
Yeah. Like somebody else we know. I'm not going to say we're going to get political here, but
just deny it until it's no longer, you know, no longer false.
Well, and if it's like 2 years has passed, then it doesn't matter really.
No.
Because you're right. No. It's the Twitter mentality.
The only time it really matters is if you ended up submitting that to a book that got published. And then they can actually go back to a hard copy and go, no, you really actually did kind of fuck up here.
That's true. But even like how you process things, right? Like you knew
that's my big one.
Off,
yeah.
You know, it was slightly different than how I do things now. At the time, I was downloading free presets from wherever I could and trying to figure out how they And that's kind of how I learned Lightroom, was like downloading those, going into the panels and going, okay, what did they change to get this effect? And I would take stuff that I liked and how that it worked and start doing it on mine. And then after a while, I was just like, you know, that's even too much work.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. You're just kind of wasting time and, you know, treading your wheels. It's better to just find a couple of presets, because I've got that. I've got a laundry list of presets or did. I've recently got rid of all of them, such as how you said, because if you have 100 of these things, you're not going to use them. It's a waste of time to click through them. And what's going to happen in the end is you're going to end up with 15 different types of images. And it's never going to be consistent. And if you go to put that up in a gallery show of a series of five or in a book, people are going to look at it and be like, well, who are these artists? Plural.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I experienced the same thing where I would create like 20 virtual copies, all processed different ways. And I'd sit there and be like, okay, who do I want to be? What do I, you know?
Who am I?
What style is it that I want to go with? And this was earlier on, and I was trying to figure it out for myself. Am I going to do the cross process thing? Am I going to?
Is it color, black and white?
Yeah. Or, and that's kind of where I stuck with black and white for a little bit, because I mean, yes, there's different ranges of black and white, but I can keep it a little more simple as far as the way that I'm thinking about it and processing it, than with color, where you just got infinite varieties of choices of how to process it.
Yeah, is it muted? Is it vibrant? Is it, you know? And then you bring in sepia and the chrome and all that other shit. And then you just have, you set yourself up for more options than you need.
Right.
And it ends up eliminating them all. And then you wake up 3-4 weeks later and go, I never even posted anything from that series.
Yeah. Well, and finding out, well, that photo that I just did 20 different versions of, it wasn't how I processed it. It was the photo that sucked.
Exactly. Yeah, you can do you can paint shit gold, but it's still going to be shit in the end.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, you know what, Renzi? There's one thing I want to make sure we talked about. You do street photography workshops, right?
Yeah. Once in a while, I'll do currently just mostly one-on-one workshops in downtown Los Angeles. Yeah.
You prefer that one-on-one element as opposed to doing group?
Yeah. I kind of do. So it's a little more intimate, where I can focus on what that person wants to learn for the for the time that we have together, compared to what I was seeing in group ones, where, you know, it's a very general workshop. I mean, yeah, you're going to get through little things here and there that's specific to certain people who ask questions. But you always have somebody there who, of course, they come in at different levels, right? Everybody has different skill levels when they come in. And so that one workshop maybe doesn't work out for every single person in that workshop. And for me, I sort of didn't like that. I wanted to be able to focus on somebody and make sure they get their money's worth when they, when they walk around with me in downtown, and be able to ask me questions. And that really started off by that, like a few friends of mine that I met through Eric or through somebody else. We'd walk around, and towards the end of the day, they're like, dude, I just learned a whole bunch of stuff just walking around with you today. I mean, that's pretty cool. You should try, you know, doing workshops. I was like, nah, about that. You know, everybody's doing that. Workshops, right? But then I was like, you know what? I can actually, you know, if people actually want to learn something and at the time also, I didn't feel like I knew enough, right? Like, what the hell do I know?
Right. Yeah.
And I'm putting myself out there as this person that knows and that can teach you, it was a weird aspect for me. So, but I figured, you know what? If I can help somebody get started or lead them in a direction that can help them out in the way that they think, in the way that they see things, and then that would be rewarding enough, right? To be able to help people, just like friends of mine who walk around me, and they're like, "Hey, dude, that totally helped me out, and I totally learned a lot of stuff." If I can do that for other people, you know, that feels good, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And the funny thing about teaching, and you actually said it right earlier, so many people that's like doing it now, there, you have to have a certain mentality to be able to convey messages, convey technique, or just to get an excitement going.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge aspect to doing a workshop, is making sure that the person that you're working with is not just interested, but they're excited and wanting to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different ways that people learn: audio, visual, doing things. You have to be able to adapt your style to match their needs. So that's where I see a big benefit in the one-on-one, is that very intimate, personal one-on-one. You know how they learn, you know what they're looking for, mm-hmm. and seeking, and you know what makes them excited. When you have five or six, or I see some workshops that go up to 20 people, it's more of a lecture run or a photo walk that you end up with, and somebody always gets left off to the side.
Yeah.
You're always as good as your weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one or two students that got nothing out of it, then that's part of the definition of that workshop and how it went. And that's what people are going to hear about.
Well, yeah. And especially if those two are the type of people that will leave a review.
Yeah.
Like, man, that guy never spent any time with me. And, you know, because I've seen it on other people's blogs, like folks that even, I mean, they're, you know, whether it's landscape or street photography or whatever,
any type of workshop.
And you'll see the comments, or somebody, it's not even on that person's website, it's other places where they've, you know, talked about, oh, this guy gives workshops and this is how he does it. And this is, you know, and it's always like, well, the guy never spent time with me, and you know, he focused on here, or he would set it up and then go off.
He had his favorite students, right? Or anything. There's a thousand reasons, and they're never good in that regard.
Yeah. So at least with one person, you know, if they really hate it, then it's just that one person, and I did everything wrong. But if I did it right, then they're happy, and that's what, you know, and that's all good.
Now, I want to issue a show disclaimer here. We're not panning all group workshops, because we've had some people on our show actually who do workshops, group workshops, and they're really good at it.
Yes.
But, we're not panning all the group workshops.
No,
just a little bit. Just kidding. It's also how you approach the workshop too, because it's also on the student a little bit to 100%. Know what to expect and review who you're going to work with, because a workshop with Eric Kim is going to be significantly different than a workshop with
like Matt Stewart or somebody.
So you have a philosophical teacher, because I know Eric's kind of more in that internal mentality on approaching the street, and then you have somebody like Matt, like you said, Matt Stewart or what have you, that may be more on the technical side of things. It's what you're going to get out of it. If you go in with a different mentality than what that teacher teaches, it's going to be a failure.
Right. I mean, you got to know, you know, like everybody's in different levels. So you don't know what you're going to, like when you first start, you don't know what you don't know. Right. So you come in and you're just like, well, I want to take good pictures. I want to take better pictures. And you think the way to do it is to shoot like somebody else. So whoever's teaching that workshop, you're looking at their work, and you're going, okay, I want to be able to shoot pictures like this person. And so you go to that workshop, and maybe that doesn't quite make sense to you, the way that they're teaching it or the way that they do it. But, you know, somebody else over here might be able to explain it better, or you might connect to it more.
Right.
So, yeah, definitely, like, if you're going to take a workshop, go through some of the work. Go through different people and see how they do their work. Also try to figure out what it is that you want to get out of it, like what kind of work you want to produce, and then work towards that. You know, I mean, sometimes if you just say, I want to take a good picture, well, that can, you know, that's anything.
Thousand different things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you like narrow it down and go, this is sort of the style that I want to go towards, there's going to be different paths to that, but they're all sort of teach you the same things to reach that technique or that look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if that doesn't work for you, well, at least you learn some of those techniques that can also be used for other things.
And that's one of the things that I always do is try to, like, when I go to San Francisco and, you know, head downtown, I always jump on the ferry. So it's like a 20, 30 minute ride over. It's relaxing. I'm off to the window, and that gives me time to kind of get in the mindset.
Nice. Yeah, I rarely think about anything when I'm
I'm sort of blank. And there is that difference, you know, on how people approach it.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'll just wander around, and if like for that days, certain days I walk around, I'm just like, wow, why can't I see anything right now? Like, there's nothing pretty, there's nothing standing out to me whatsoever. And then there's days where I'm just like, whoa, right there. Oh, yeah, man, yeah. Look at that. Yeah. Oh, shoot. Oh, man, I missed it. You know.
Oh, that so last many, part is most of street. It's like, yeah. Oh, shit, I missed it.
Yeah,
it's
great. It is. Yeah, once you see it, you missed it, right? That's what they say.
Yeah. So. What street photography is mostly failure with some moments of awesomeness.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
You really got to be able to accept losses whenever you jump into this.
Exactly. Yeah, like Eric used to say in his workshops, he'd say, if you think about it, so if you shot for a day, mm-hmm. right, maybe you'd have one that you liked, one or two that you liked out of that day.
Uh-huh. Right?
But let's say you shot for 7 days and you just looked at that collectively, there only might be one or two. And if you look for the month, maybe one or two again.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
And it might not be the one from that one day or that week or completely different. And then out of a year, it could be only one. Of like one really, really great one. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of photos that mm-hmm, are just sitting mm-hmm. there that'll never be seen. They'll never see the light of day because they either really suck or they're just almost there, but they're not. So it's not even worth it, right?
Don't put it out there.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
You have to accept it. It just wasn't there. Yeah. But it's very easy to get jaded whenever you think about it on the surface that, oh, you know, I'm doing all of this work and I'm only getting one image or two or three images a year. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is, if you think about the master painters, you know, your Da Vinci's, Michelangelo's, your Raphael, you know, that's kind of going down the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. But,
Whom I love.
Hey, Leonardo for the win, man. But they spend not just, they're not getting five or six paintings a day. It's not going to happen. They're going to spend a lot of time honing their talents and really perfecting a single painting. And that's what they end up putting out there. And when it comes to photography, street photography as an example, you spend a lot of time, hundreds, if not thousands of images to find that one. That you finally, you know, hit the mark, your strokes were right, the colors or, you know, shades of black and white were perfect. There's your masterpiece. Right. Move on to the next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's even something with that, with as far as you bringing up master painters and stuff like that and sort of the way artists learn, right? There used to be something called apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, Michelangelo, some of these guys that you mentioned would apprentice with somebody who is a lot better than them. And they would do the things exactly the way that master did it. And then it wasn't until that point in time where they became the master that they can then do their own style.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a good way to learn too. I mean, you know, yeah, a lot of people, I don't read them as much anymore with the Facebook groups and the comments. Complain about, oh, there's so many things that are the same out there. And, but like, that's how people are going to learn.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. That's
they're,
right.
They're copying or they're shooting the way somebody does it. Right. That what they're seeing online or whoever their influences are and their inspirations are, they're going to try to shoot in that way. That's a good way to learn.
Very.
Until they figure out their own way of doing it, right?
Right.
Now I can't speak for everybody on those comment sections.
No. You're talking about the whole. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, listeners out there, Renzi's talking about all of you, every single one of you listening right now. So remember that, and if you can, just direct all comments and feedback, not to us at Street Pics, to Renzi, and we'll add his email into the show notes.
Oh, it is a good way to learn to copy.
It very much is.
Yeah, it is. I agree.
What's the phrase? Not stealing is to something.
I was going to say fake it till you make it.
You blew that, man.
I live that mantra. It's like, can you do heart surgery? Give me a minute. I need to go to YouTube.
Right.
Yeah. I'll know here in about 20 minutes how to do heart surgery.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is a great way to learn, and don't feel like you need not. Everybody has something to provide. Even somebody that you look at their work and you might not like the work, there is still something to learn from every artist that you run around. Yeah. And that's why the communities that we are a part of and participate in are so important. Why collectives are so, you know, kind of mainstream now, because having a core group of individuals, be that in a Facebook group or a at-home collective, allows you not just like-minded, but also differing minds to look at your work in a different perspective and say, you know, I know what you're going for, but if you have to explain it to me, then it's an almost. Move on to something else. Or the people with the honesty to tell you that something is shit, or, you know, or we've had other guests in the past to have mentors that told them to sell their camera. Maybe not that far, but it just depends on what you need in your mind to flip the switch and move forward past that.
Yeah.
Renzi, have you ever had a portfolio review done? Have you gone through that process?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
You know, I've had a few good friends, like, for example, Frank Jackson and Chris Weeks, and, you know, Dana Barsoon, you know, some of the guys in that I've become good friends with, just from getting into street photography, who I show my work to here and there, and I'll get their input into it. And, but a lot of times it's just a social media general input, right, from everybody, and kind of just getting a sense. And once in a while, somebody will leave a feedback that, you know, that it's not just, oh, great picture or whatever, but they've really taken the time to critique it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. Like when they actually critique it in a good way, where they break it down, what's good about it, what needs work, and how they feel, right? Like that, for me, I came from art school. So those are the sort of the criteria for me, like what we used to sit in class and critique each other's work. Uh-huh. That's how we would critique it. Like, okay, this is what's good about it. This is what, you know, probably you can change or think about differently. This is how it made me feel. This is how the photo made me feel. Or this is how the design made me feel. And that's great. I love getting those kind of critiques, because, you know, it's from the heart, and it's knowledgeable critiques.
Uh-huh.
You got to be careful on who and on the manner in which you show people, because I learned the hard way. My friend Richard Bram out of In Public, he's burned me down once in a good way.
Yeah.
But I met up with him when I was in New York. We met for some beers, kind of about midway through, and just caught up. He's about to move to London, just kind of seeing how his move's going along and everything. But I made the mistake of pulling out my cell phone, and I was like, hey, you know, I just want to show you this one cool kind of image. And I handed it to him, and he looks at it for kind of a second, you know. And if anybody out there has ever worked with, been at a workshop with, or what have you, with Richard Bram, he makes no bones about anything. He'll dice it up. But I made the mistake of handing it to him while it was on my quote-unquote digital contact sheet. And then he just starts flipping through.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, no, that's not what I meant. He goes, no, you done handed it to me now. So he's holding my phone, and he's got the other arm outstretched holding me back. And I'm like, ah, shit. So we ended up spending 20 minutes, and he's like, no. And he's, why'd you do that? I'm like, that wasn't what I meant to do, Rich.
But you know that I think you had this, the portfolio review with Richard at the street photo thing. And that really, what you said that he told you really changed the way I looked at the way I was shooting. Because remember the thing where you said that he went through your portfolio.
People walking by,
that's all it was. And I was doing the same thing, Renzi. I was doing exactly the same thing. And when Casper told me what Richard had told him, it totally changed the way that I was doing a certain aspect of my portfolio. You know, cause I would sit down and, you know, I would see people walking down the street and maybe something at that moment got to, you know, touch me. Yeah. And I said, oh, you know, I'll take this shot. And when I look at it, it's just really people walking down the street. Yes. You know, that's all it is. And that brought it out to me. That showed me what I was doing. And now I've been telling Casper, I'm having a difficult time now shooting because I can't find anything now.
Although you're analyzing your work more.
Yeah, deeply. Exactly. I'm analyzing my work just because of this third person portfolio review I had.
Yeah. You know, by way of now talking about comments on work and everything, you do, Renzi, you do judging with contests. And I know you were a judge at one of the street photo contests mm-hmm. last year. I believe you have something you just posted up recently that you might be. Are you doing some judging for something else right now?
Not necessarily judging, but there's a project here in LA. It's called Phases and Faces of Affordable Housing in Los Angeles. And it's going to be an exhibit in March of next year, March 15th to April 30th. But the submissions for people, the deadline is October 31st. So it's the end of this month. And it's actually a family friend of mine who works for the city of Los Angeles, who's going to be curating this stuff. And what they'll do is they'll print and exhibit the photos in this really large area. I can't remember exactly what the name of the building is right now. I remember a few years ago walking past the exhibit. And so this is, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's happening in LA.
So this is all exterior? Like where they're going to be showing the pictures?
Yeah, it's a partially interior and partially exterior.
Okay.
If I remember that year correctly. It might be all interior this year, depending on how much rain we have next year.
True.
But it's going to be cool. You know, and that's...
It's an open show, but it's focused in LA. Like all the shots need to be from within LA?
Yes, or... yes, but it could be as long as it touches upon the subject of affordable housing in mm-hmm. Los Angeles, or so it could be just outside of downtown or other parts of LA. I think it's open to that. But if it hits on the subject of
the affordable housing
and the homeless community, or you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what actually people get. So I'll be submitting. Something I find in my my Lightroom catalog, or I'll be rushing to go out and shoot and try to see if I can get something before the deadline.
Every time I see a deadline pop up, I always look back at my work and go, "None of this is all shit. None of this is good enough. I need to go back out to the street."
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I know the feeling.
We started the show out talking about kind of inspirations, what kind of brought you to the camera and what illuminated you to street photography. And you were talking about Metzger and Irwitt. Photo books is something that we've been talking about a lot here in recent episodes. Yeah. Is there any photo books you want to that you like that you want to recommend to people out there?
Oh, my gosh.
Turn around, take a look at the library.
Well, there's a few books up here. There's a Saul Eider Early Color. I got the Dido Moriyama, The World Through My Eyes, Fred Herzog, of course, The Americans. And over there is my actual bookshelf. I haven't bought a book in a while just because of space.
Yeah.
And there's some of these where I haven't even actually looked at them.
That's sacrilege, man.
It's weird, yeah. Well, I've gotten like halfway, and then I put the bookmark, and then I just haven't gotten back to it yet. But... I mean, really,
I just made you soaking it in.
What it really comes down to is going out and finding books that speak to you, right?
Yeah.
That influences you. And those were the books that when I would go to bookstores, for example, there's a few good bookstores in LA. One's in Atwater. The one that I saw that had a lot of really good books. But I flipped through a lot of them, like ones that I knew and names that I didn't know and genres that I didn't really, that I wasn't really into, but I'll still look through all these books and then, you know, I'll set aside some that I feel like I like. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to do with street photography. I have some landscape, you know, portrait books, you know, but I have three Vivian Maier books because they were given to me as presents.
Uh-huh. Now you're just obsessed. Tell the people. Just be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the Steve McCurry.
Wait, is that how to on Photoshop?
No. No. I bought it way before that happened. Oh, man. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, anybody that's upset about that comment, you can send it to idontcare@streetpx.com. Yeah. You're right. It doesn't have to be street photography related books. Yeah. It can be wide. I got a photo book over here that is like 60 pages of trees in urban landscapes.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
There it is.
But it's all black and white. And the manner in which this person does these shots, yes, I take out and I use on people in the street,
yeah,
you know, to get textures and to get my highlights and everything right. And that book was only about damn trees.
Yeah. Yeah. You can learn from anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We got always one question that we like to ask all of our guests there at the end. I guess this would be a good time to kind of put a pin in everything and say, I know you like to travel quite a bit. Is there any place out there that you haven't been to yet that you really dream of wanting to go and shoot at?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's always that one always kind of catches everybody.
Yeah. Because there's a lot.
Yeah.
I think, off the top of my head, I would love to go to Istanbul.
Istanbul.
Yeah.
Ooh.
In Turkey.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think we've got that one a couple of times,
yeah,
which is interesting because it's always that in my mind always seems like a very colorful place.
Yeah.
But it's always our black and white lean street photographers guests that bring up Istanbul.
Yeah.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Yeah,
Jim's been there. Jim's ran around that area.
Yeah, because I've talked to folks that have been out there, and then you know some of the guys that still live out there, and you know it just seems like an interesting place. Of course the architecture is amazing. The light's amazing. Sort of the political things that are happening out there. I think it would be a really interesting place to visit. The other one, my sister actually just came back from is Greece.
So, oh, yeah.
From the photos themselves, if it's anything like that, I'm there. I want to go there.
Yeah.
Oh, so your sister's shooting as well? Or at least more
her,
kind of like...
I lent her a camera for her vacation out there. She just got back last week. And she got some really good stuff, you know. So
hey, there you go.
Some things are rubbing off. Yeah,
just give her another camera. Keep pushing her out there. Bring her along.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, Casper. Where I don't remember. Where is there a place where you would go that you haven't been?
You gotta throw that one back at me.
Yeah,
okay,
throw it back at you.
Let's do that.
For me, I would say Seoul, South Korea.
Oh,
nice.
That's somewhere I would. It always kind of feels like a Blade Runner-ish type of city,
uh-huh,
and very, very technically driven LCD screens everywhere, mm-hmm, or LED, depending on, you know, what time era we're in, I guess now. There's just so much there to pull from. Yeah, it's Seoul would be mine. How about you? What about you?
Tokyo for me.
Tokyo.
Tokyo. I would love to go to Tokyo. I tell you.
Now, Renzi, you were there, weren't you?
I was in Tokyo. It's awesome there. I mean, both. Seoul is beautiful, too. Now, I was in Seoul in 2005, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It was for my friend's wedding. Point and shoot
always
camera
for a wedding.
Again. Yeah. And, it was so much fun there. The public transportation's so simple and easy and affordable. It's really great out there, and we even went all the way to the demilitarized zone.
Oh yeah,
oh, really
cool. Yeah, just to the border, you'd see North Korea from the border.
Just stand there at the gate and yell at the ones on the other side.
Well, there's the demilitarized zone, which is right in between, where it's just the whole zone of land where that's what's separating the two countries,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's a trip.
Yeah. It is. It looks so different. I mean, I don't know what the rest of North Korea looks like, but from just, total Western country, a lot of people speak English. Lots of people go to school in England, so there's a lot of British accents in Korea. as far as like the military is concerned. But nah, yeah, just amazing place. The food is great. There's the nightclubs too. They're fun. The food is amazing. A little spicy for me, but yeah, the food is amazing.
Yeah, that's the other kind of reason that's pulled me that way is the food. I tend to walk where my stomach takes me. Like when I was in New York, a friend of mine, Skyla, had introduced me to the place called Tasty Dumpling. It's in Chinatown. Ooh. And it's this little hole in the wall. All they do is dumplings, and if you want to drink, they just have like a little soda machine over here. but you can get like 10 dumplings in this place and a soda for under $4. Wow. Which I'm also a cheap ass too. So, yeah. But they were so freaking good. And, I ended up going there like 3 times to this little Tasty Dumpling place throughout my time there. And then not only that, but all the food stands, anytime any place has chicken and rice, get it and make sure they put the white sauce on there too, because it is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another reason why Seoul comes to my mind, is because of the food. And I'm a spicy food kind of guy. Oh, so man, the spicier the better.
Yeah, yeah, you'll love it out there. The two places, India, work sent me to Bangalore 1 year, and the food there is so spicy. Same thing with in Korea. I wish I was more of a spicy food eater, but yeah, to find stuff that didn't make me sweat so much.
Right on. Well, cool, man. I really appreciate that. And before we put a close to this, let's go ahead and go around the table. And Renzi, tell us where we can find your work, more about you. And
you can go to my website, RenziRuizPhotography.com, or if you're on Tumblr, it's streetzen.tumblr.com. I'm also on Flickr and Instagram and Facebook. I think if you just type in Renzi Ruiz on Google, I think a lot of my stuff will come up there. There's a lot of other people with my name, so that really helps, I guess, with the Google part of it. Definitely look me up. I'm out there.
And I just want to make sure, if you're in the LA area, check out his street photography workshops, man.
Yeah. Got the website for that too. Yeah. It's lastreetphotographyworkshop.com.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we'll add that stuff in the show notes too.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. And Jimbo, where can we find you at?
As for me, jimwatkinsphoto.com, and also building a new one that's totally dedicated to street photography. That'll be coming up. Nice. So in another show, I'll have an address for that too. But in that jimwatkinsphoto.com, you'll see all my links to all my social media platforms. So there I am.
Excellent.
Yes, excellent. Sir. What about you?
And yeah, for me, you can find me at recasper.com. Same for all of my social media links are going to be located there: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc., etc. But above all, take a look at streetpx.com. That's where you're going to find all of our previous episodes, all the show notes that we've talked about here today, links. We're going to be adding a stream in of Renzi's shots, so you can see more of his work right from there, but it'll link off to his website, so it'll make things easier to navigate from, so you don't have to type anything. It's 21st century. Most everything's voice and clicks now, apparently. Also, take a look at iTunes. Find us on there. If you are on iTunes, if you're listening to this on iTunes, please go on there, shoot us a review, maybe throw some stars our way. It's that digital currency helps us get within more ears. You can also find out on Google Play. They got a podcaster too that's seems to be a dead zone these days, but it is there. And we recently got on iHeartRadio. I think they do reviews there. If they do, type it on in. Check us out on Patreon. That's where you can help us stay in, stay on the mic, keep the mic hot, and throw a few dollars our way and get some free merchandise and free access to bonus material that, because our episodes always end up running a little long. But yeah, I really appreciate everybody sticking with us through this and listening in. Jim, thank you so much for co-hosting with me.
All right, thank you, sir.
I appreciate it. Renzi, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, listeners. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
All right. Take care.
Peace out, everybody.